You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, christianhumanist.org.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the City of Man podcast. My name is Coyle Neal. I am an associate professor of political science at Southwest Baptist University in Bolivar, Missouri. Joining me today for a very special episode of the City of Man podcast is Dr. Edward Song, associate professor of philosophy at Westmont College in Santa Barbara, California. Ed, did I get all of that right?
That is correct. Thank you very much, Coyle, for having me on your show.
I am excited to have you here, Ed. I know this is a first for you, but if you're not familiar with the format, no, I'm kidding. How have you been?
I can't remember when exactly the last episode we recorded was, but it was certainly before COVID-19 was a part of everybody's lexicon.
I don't think it was. I think it was in April. I think we recorded right after the shutdown.
Oh, well, I take that back then. Yeah, maybe that's right. Well, a lot has happened in our country. Not the least of which is that I was up till 1 a.m. last night for completely irrational reasons, because I was fully well aware that there was no little bit of new information that was going to be coming up, but I just couldn't pull myself off of my various different windows, refreshing them constantly to hear what is going on in DeKalb County or Maricopa County or all of these places that I now feel intimately familiar with. And
the last episode we recorded was on May 11th, 2020. So a couple of weeks, a couple of months into COVID.
Well, anyways, I mean, we're doing better than we have a right to, and certainly better than most people do. Like, it hasn't affected our employment, but, and then even as a family dealing with the virus, we've been fine. I've been running a lot. I'm in better shape than I've been in 3 years, and I've lost 15 pounds because of COVID, basically, because I'm just running a ton.
You're one of those people. I've gotten a lot of books read. I have not run a ton. I probably should have run, but I went the other direction.
I tried to accomplish both of those things at the same time.
I can't run and read at the same time. That's not something I've managed to work out. Audiobooks. I can do audiobooks. Excited to be able to have Ed back on the show, because we basically did this very episode 4 years ago. Right, the morning after the Trump election in 2016, we got together and recorded something. I do not remember what we said. I did not go back and listen to it, but I thought it'd be a good idea to do something similar. So Ed, why don't you start us off here? What are your thoughts? We, as of right now, we still don't know the outcome, but it looks like Biden has a fairly reasonable lead in Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, and Nevada. And if Trump doesn't win at least Michigan, Wisconsin, or Arizona, he won't win the election. What are kind of your thoughts on the whole situation?
Well, last night was a topsy-turvy, pretty depressing and stressful evening. I think that going into the election, I was among the people who had read all those things about the mythical shy Trump voter and the arguments against that, to think that Biden was going to win pretty comfortably, and the Senate and the House and all of that. And so as the results were turning in, yeah, that was my psyche was an unpleasant place to be inhabiting. And then stayed up late, woke up this morning, saw that it looks like Arizona is going to go to Biden. Nevada is crazy close, but it kind of looks like Nevada is going to fall to Biden. Georgia, I actually think that Georgia is going to fall into Biden's category as well as Michigan. And, you know, I don't know about Pennsylvania, actually. And so am relieved, I guess, this morning, though still, I mean, we're recording this now. In an hour, what I just said might seem incredibly foolish, but that's what I'm thinking right now. But so I feel relieved. I'm disappointed that Democrats aren't going to take the Senate unless something really strange happens. And but otherwise, I mean, in a certain kind of a way, I mean, I think this outcome is a good outcome, but it's still the case that it's not like it really solves anything, because it's not like Donald Trump and what Donald Trump represents is going to go anywhere. I expect that he's going to go off and start a television network that's going to make Fox News look like, you know, Sesame Street. Is probably going to make a lot of money, is going to have a very loud and prominent voice. His kids may or may not also get involved in politics. But I certainly think it's the case that Trump becomes only a little bit less consequential and influential on our national political and social life, which I think is bad.
He's certainly not leaving Twitter.
Unless they just kick him off. But
I mean, that would be bad for Twitter if they were to do that. It's one thing to deplatform the kooks on the fringes. It's another thing to deplatform someone with that many followers.
Well, yeah, that's right. And I'm kind of half joking, but I mean, his ability to kind of go right up to the edge. So, I mean, his remarks last night, for example, I don't know if you saw his speech live.
I watched it this morning, but.
Yeah, so you did. I mean, so that was, you know, pretty disturbing and pretty clearly untrue. And I don't know, like in danger of destabilizing the political process in incredibly deep-seated ways. So I'm sorry. I'm just like listening to myself and I sound like such a such a font of whiny pessimism and negativity. But like the fact of the matter is, even though I'm really happy that Biden's probably going to win, it's like it's still the case that the country is really deeply divided between two really deeply conflicting worldviews in ways that I think are very, very troubling for us for the rest of our lives, I'll say. Rest of my life as somebody who's in his late 40s.
Yeah, at least two worldviews, right? There's the whatever we're going to call the Trumpian side of the Republican Party, and then the progressive, but progressive doesn't quite catch it. The Bernie Sanders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez side of the Democratic Party, but then there's the quote unquote mainstream version of each of those also. That neither of them really has a point that brings them all together, right? So the Bernie Sanders-esque Democrats are united in their kind of far left progressivism. The Trumpian Republicans are united in the person of Trump, but the other parts of those parties don't have any focal point, right? There's no real set of shared beliefs other than a desire not to see the extremes completely swamp everything, fighting with a desire to win elections. And I don't know how those four bodies are going to work themselves out over the next however many years.
Yeah. So I have thoughts on everything that you just said, but I should flip around your introductory question to me and just say, you know, or you can finish the sentence. Today, I feel blank.
Oh, tired. I wasn't up as late as you were because they said it wasn't going to. There weren't going to be any results. Just a few thoughts that I've had, and some of these I'm sure aren't original to me. I'm sure I'm stealing some of these from social media friends and from stuff I've read since last night. The popular vote is basically unchanged. It's a difference of 3 million votes, which is exactly what it was in 2016, a difference that is entirely accounted for by California. So Biden won California by 4 million votes. So if you factor out California, Trump has a popular lead. If you don't factor out California, Biden wins the popular vote. I think there's a lot of reason for Republicans to be optimistic about 2024. Whatever the result today, whatever not today, but you know in the next couple of weeks, which you know it looks like Biden is going to win. I think maybe with a couple of caveats. I don't know what's going to happen in Michigan. If this ends up in the courts, then I think all of a sudden it's anybody's game. So I don't know what that'll look like. But with all of that said, Republicans in 2024 have a lot to sort of look forward to. Whatever else they think about Trump, he's broken the blue wall, at least in the upper Midwest, right? Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania are all now legitimately in play in a way that, you know, 5 years ago, nobody would have said their possibilities to go Republican. Right. All of them, all but Minnesota did in the last election, and they almost all did in this election. Also, the repudiation of certain kinds of progressivism in the Trump campaign again is something to pay attention to. So the female and minority vote for Trump increased over the 2016 election. So Trump actually, I have the numbers here. Trump doubled the number of African American women who voted for him, which it wasn't huge. In 2016, it was 4%. In 2020, it was 8%. 2% more white women voted for him. 4% more black men voted for him. 3% more Latino men voted for him. 3% more Latino women voted for him. These are all, again, it wasn't a majority of any of those groups except for white women, but still kind of cracks in assumptions about minorities and how women and minorities vote. The only demographic group that Trump decreased in this election was white men, where he dropped down from 62% in 2016 to 57% in 2020. So, again, there are demographic things that presumably Republicans are paying close attention to and will take advantage of in 2020. What else? You and I were talking about this a little bit beforehand. Republicans kept the Senate. Whatever answer Biden refused to give about court packing is now irrelevant because there won't be any court packing, at least until 2022. And 2022 looks like a good election for Republicans in the Senate also. I think Biden will still, even without the ability to pack the Supreme Court, I think he'll still get at least two appointments. So it's not like there will be nothing for the Democrats in the Supreme Court. And I think one of the big takeaways.
You think he's going to get two appointments, really?
I think so. I think he'll get Breyer for sure. I think Breyer will step down. And who was the other judge?
The Senate might not. I mean, I think it's entirely possible that Mitch McConnell's like, no, you can't nominate anybody. I don't care anymore.
Well, I think that depends. So my second guess is that Thomas is thinking. Now I don't know if he will. He may just try to pull a Ginsburg.
There's
and hold
no
on all the way
way
through.
That Clarence Thomas resigns under a Democratic president.
Yeah, I would say there's no way that
no
Thomas
way.
Is replaced under a Democratic president as long as Mitch McConnell's the majority leader.
Oh, sure. Well, sure. I mean, that's.
Thomas is 72. So, you know, it's not outside the realm of possibility that he dies or decides he's had enough. But I think Breyer for sure is going to be on his way out. Which is sad. I really like Breyer, so I'll be a little sad to see him leave the court. So the other thought that I've had is bringing in outside money into Senate elections is not a good idea to begin with, but it's also actively not useful. So the Democrats basically lost every election that they tried to do that in. So Maine, Georgia, Iowa, and Montana were all kind of big money Senate races where the Democrats massively outspent the Republicans in the Senate race, and not because Montanans were donating tons of money to Steve Bullock's campaign, but because of the PACs and the wealthy donors and so on. And the only Senate race where that had any positive effect was in Colorado, and I think it's probably fair to say that the Democrats were going to win Colorado anyway. So, yeah, those are all. Where does all of that leave me? There wasn't a blue wave, there wasn't a red wave. I think I'm comfortable with that. I'm glad it wasn't a blowout for anyone. I would be much less comfortable with a Biden presidency where he had, whatever predictions they were making, 340 electoral votes, or a Trump presidency where he was going to have, some of my friends were saying, 370 electoral votes. I think a nice 270 to 280 win leaves us in a good place, whichever side it is. You're the president and you're legitimately the president, but it's not like you have a supermajority of the country on your side. I think that knowledge is important. Not that Trump has any real knowledge, but.
Can I go back? There are a few things that we could talk about, but the thing that jumps out to me the most is just your optimism about the future state of the Republican Party going into 2024. In some ways, I think there are some new people in the Republican firmament that I think are going to be compelling candidates. Tom Cotton, for one. He's somebody who certainly has presidential ambitions. Ben Sasse, for another, but I hear his name mentioned less often with regard to his interest in immediately pursuing higher office.
I hope he doesn't soil himself by running for the presidency.
Well, yeah, okay. But and then, you note the way in which Trump made some interesting inroads into demographics that have typically been allergic to the Republican Party. Those things are interesting, and I think point less to enduring assets in the state of contemporary conservative politics, and more to do with Trump's particular appeal among certain demographics, as well as the difference between Clinton and Biden's appeals to those same demographics.
I mean, it's possible, but this is in the wake of 4 years of a full-on onslaught from the left, screaming at the top of their lungs, Trump and all Republicans are racist and sexist. Trump still increased the amount of minority and female votes for him.
I think a lot of that, I guess that has to do with Trump and not with it's everything to do with Trump and his personality. And so a lot of people noted, for example, a certain degree of surprise about both that Biden lost Florida. I mean, maybe that's not so much of a surprise, but the margin. And it looks like one of the major reasons for that, right, is that he didn't do as well as Hillary Clinton did with male Hispanic voters. Similarly, people noted the way in which Trump particularly picked up votes among African-American men. And I feel like that outreach has everything to do with Trump and his personality and not like policy features or anything enduring that's going to end up on the Republican shelf that Tom Cotton can just pull off. And,
I mean, maybe. But again, this is – Trump made inroads in the Hispanic vote after 4 years of talking about building the wall, and made inroads in the African-American vote after intentionally opposing the Black Lives Matter movement, intentionally and publicly opposing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, that is policy.
So where did those inroads come from? It came from the fact that a lot of people just sort of, they really liked his swaggering machismo, take no prisoners. They liked that. And I think is the nature of the appeal. And so if a candidate is able to create that, then I think they'll be able to preserve those inroads. I mean, there is the fact that both the African-American community, or parts of the African-American community, and certainly large parts of the Hispanic community, are very socially conservative, you know? And so in some ways, it's no surprise. But I feel like the specific appeal a lot is in his style. And so unless you are able to recreate the style, you're not going to get those votes. I also think those gains, I mean, the gains in Florida were really significant and probably swung Florida. And so that's obviously significant. But, and that, you know, that just a little bit more broadly to your more general point. I just don't feel like Republicans are just going to be able to kind of sweep away Trumpism from, and then just kind of elect the next person. And he's going to be like a George W. Bush style Republican. Like, I just think those days are done. It's Trumpism is the Republican Party.
Right. So I'm assuming, 4 years from now, regardless of whatever happens with this election, it'll be someone like Josh Hawley or Tom Cotton, or to a lesser extent, Tim Scott, although I don't think he quite fits in with those two as well. Maybe just because of his personality is so much more mellow than theirs is. But it'll be someone who tries to pull what they see as the best aspects of Trumpism out and leave the crudity behind. So someone who is a unashamed populist, right, an unashamed nationalist, but in the good sense of both of those terms. Whether they'll be able to pull that off or not, I don't know. But
so just tacit racism as opposed to overt racism.
Well, if we agree with that analysis, yeah. So again, I don't know. I don't know what things are going to look like in 4 years. I think in some sense it's going to be like 2016. The Republicans are going to have a full slate of highly qualified and attractive candidates. The question will be more, will they clean house before it becomes a crisis the way the Democrats did in 2020? Will people, quit kind of suspiciously all on the same day after having won major victories? Or will they do what the Republicans did in 2016 and keep fighting and divide the vote against themselves and end up with the worst candidate running instead of some
good
ones?
Yeah, well, the worst candidate who won.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I don't know that anyone else would have.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. It's like all of the things that make, everybody embarrassed and fearful of Trump, but especially conservatives, it's like Trump is winning not despite those things, but because of those things. And I just feel like the next person, I mean, it's possible that they can thread the needle and find somebody who, as you say, can appeal to the same, working class workers with the same kind of machismo and desire to give the finger, the finger to the establishment. That
or actually giving the finger to the establishment.
Who can bridge the gap between the populism and traditional conservative political ideology? Maybe, but I just feel like, in 2016, like the machinery that swept Trump into office in 2016. Like, that wasn't built. He built that on the fly. Now it's built, you know? And you got to have somebody like that to activate it. And he's going to continue to be influential. He's going to have a huge say in selecting the next Republican nominee. The next Republican nominee might well be his last name might well, or her last name might well be Trump. And if it isn't, it's going to be, it might be somebody who's even worse. I mean, that's entirely possible.
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen 4 years from now. If it goes into the courts, which I'm sure it will on a smaller scale, some places, it's already in the courts on a smaller scale, various places. What are your thoughts on that?
I just don't think that matters. I mean, there's just not a lot to sue about. I mean, they're literally just counting votes at this point, and you can't tell them to stop counting votes. There's a little question about what the deadline is, but I just don't think that matters either way. Like, even if they don't extend the deadline in Pennsylvania or other states, I think he's probably not going to need it. There's all of this talk, and we'll see what happens. And, I'm really encouraged by the fact that there don't appear to be many shenanigans and that yesterday election went smoothly. There are some murmurings about ballots that may or may not be tucked away in corners of United States Postal Service's warehouses or whatever. But I don't think that matters.
Yeah, or if there is cheating going on, which there probably is, it'll be on the same scale as in 2016, where it won't actually affect the outcome of the election anywhere. But I don't know. Like I said, I'm hesitant to make predictions because, of course, 2000, right, it ended up in the courts and didn't affect the outcome other than in terms of the speed at which it was decided. but that's not to say that would be the same result this time.
Yeah, I just feel like this time the supposed issues are just really different. I mean, we're not talking about hanging chads and when it counts as legal or not. It's just like it's all pretty straightforward. They're literally doing what they're supposed to be doing. Like, Pennsylvania election law forbade them from counting mail-in ballots before Election Day. And so it's just going to take a while. I just don't think that's going to be an issue, actually.
The bigger concern is were there people manufacturing ballots and adding them to the stacks? Right.
Is there any reason to think that?
It happened in 2016. It didn't happen it happened in Michigan and Wisconsin. It didn't happen in a way that affected the outcome of the election, but it did happen. So,
along with the voter suppression in Georgia and the mysteriously, these weird things happening with the United States Postal Service right now.
Yeah, again.
Decommissioning mail sorting machines, telling postal police security officers did not report for duty this week.
Right. Yeah. Again, I think there is certainly cheating that is going on. I don't think it's the sort of cheating that will change the outcome. At least historically, it hasn't been that.
Yeah, I don't. I agree with you.
Now, again, will that be true if it goes into major court cases? I don't know. It hasn't historically. Hasn't affected. The courts have not historically affected the outcome, which isn't to say that'll be true in 2020, because 2020 has been a weird year. Anything else? Any other thoughts you've got about this? Otherwise, I'll have a closing theological question for you.
No, hit me with your closing theological question.
Closing theological question. Before we do that, we've talked about Republicans in 2024. What's your prediction for Democrats in 2024?
I really don't know, Coyle.
Biden will be 82.
Well, and he's already said he's not going to run again. So I suppose the next person up would be Kamala, and that's fine with me.
I would have voted Biden if he hadn't picked her as a running mate.
And what is it about her that bothers you so much?
She was one of the three farthest left candidates on the stage.
I actually don't know if that's true, but anyways.
I mean, She is not as far left as Bernie or Elizabeth Warren, but I mean, yeah, she was by no means a moderate candidate by any reasonable definition of that.
Well, her law enforcement bona fides and career as an attorney general are certainly on the law and order side of things.
Yeah, her voting record in the Senate, her policy positions are, yeah, far too far left for me to be comfortable voting.
Well, anyways, so assuming that she's the next person up, she picks a male Hispanic running mate. I think that's going to be a pretty compelling ticket, and we'll see. I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I do think the trend is that, you know, so you talked earlier about how Trump brought Wisconsin, Minnesota, though I disagree with you a little bit on Minnesota. I don't think that was particularly close. But in Michigan,
2016, Minnesota was within 1% of the popular vote.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, anyways, those three places, the so-called blue wall into play. And I know maybe that's true, but again, I feel like it's like Trump did that. Republicanism didn't do that. Trump did that. And so in as much as those places are in play, it's the extent to which, you know, you have a Trumpian style candidate. So maybe you're right, but you're going to end up with a candidate who you don't like.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. And one of the lessons of 2016 is, you talked about building a bridge between the Trump style and traditional conservatism. One of the lessons is traditional conservatives will fall in line. You don't have to build that bridge because they'll just go along. So,
yeah. Well, yeah. And that's kind of the way in which I think Trumpism has kind of eclipsed all of that, and that it's not policy at all. Right. Maybe aside from very right wing libertarian kinds of views about taxes and whatnot. But on trade, it certainly isn't traditionally conservative, and it's all nationalism. But then interestingly, I mean, you know, even in conservatism, that conservatism is holding like these. We never had a conversation about national conservatism.
We did. We did, right? An episode on that.
Oh, did we? Did we really?
Yep.
Oh,
we did.
You know, and so even like the very nature of what conservatism is kind of being redefined to, you know, precisely to accommodate that kind of thing. But sorry, I'm getting distracted. So you made the earlier point that like Trump made inroads, and maybe that's right. But then equally, I'd say that like progressives are making similar kinds of inroads into traditional. So it looks like Biden is going to lose North Carolina, but North Carolina is certainly a state that was sort of becoming I mean, like it's sort of like Virginia, but, you know, like 5 years behind. Like a Republican just is, they're not going to win Virginia. Like that's now a reliable blue state. And then North Carolina is going to be next to fall. I actually think that Democrats are going to win. Biden's going to win Georgia. But even if that doesn't happen, it's definitely the case that Georgia is in play. I think a different, you know, Florida is a toss up. Biden didn't come close to winning in Texas. And, you know, the next Democratic candidate in 2024 probably is going to win Texas either, unless, I mean, I don't know, unless they're a Texan or something like that. But Texas in the next 10 years, just demographically, is certainly in play. Arizona, I just feel like all of the demographics of it are like the moral arc of the universe is bending in a progressive direction. It's just bending pretty slowly. Don't you think that, or do you not think that?
No, I think you're probably right. I probably think that for different reasons that have to do with moral decay and utopianism and all of the other sorts of terrible things that come to a nation in decline. But I don't disagree with
just,
you.
So that's just silly talk. I mean, that's just silly talk. Like, life in the Scandinavian countries is so awful, where there's just tremendously lower rates of violent crime and inequality, and people are happier and healthier and live longer. and their economies grow at rates at least comparable to that of the United States, if not higher. Like, life in Denmark, this tiny freezing country with like 12 days of summer.
And there are certainly things about Scandinavian countries that I would be willing to give a try here. Their robustly autonomous localized healthcare system, I think, would be well worth trying. But I also
one that,
think
that the one that guarantees universal healthcare access through
yes, with absolute federal control over that handled at the local level. Yeah, give it a try. Let's see what happens.
Well, that's fine.
We should move into theological questions.
Sure.
Ed, how should Christians think theologically about yesterday's election?
Well, that is a super complicated question. I mean, I would say that a biblical vision of our vocation as Christians, as followers of Jesus Christ, is to be his heralds and ambassadors, proclaiming that Jesus' death and resurrection has ushered in the redemption of creation. And just as Jesus himself went about enacting that gospel message by ministering to the poor and disadvantaged, I would similarly say that we articulate that gospel message by instantiating it. So, you know, we should care about the disadvantaged and the marginalized. And a part of that care should get expressed, through desiring political institutions that achieve justice for people. So we should care about progressive policies. But that's not really the question that you wanted me to answer.
I mean, I certainly agree that Christians should care about progressive policies. they must be opposed.
Yeah, well, one of the enduring features of Trumpism is the disregard for facts. So we'll let that go. Like masks working and global warming happening. But, you know, this gets to the point that I was getting at earlier, and like the division is really, really disturbing. I mean, it's just disturbing because it's disturbing, and that there's the culture war has gotten ever more divisive, is leading to real conflict and violence and the erosion of democratic norms. In a way that's just deeply, deeply troubling. I mean, I know it's not as bad as the Civil War, right? But that's really bad. And probably not as bad as the fight for civil rights in the 50s and 60s. But, you know, it's getting there. And then I'll go further and say that, like, Christians are bound up in that in ways that are really uncomfortable. And to me, it's really clear that a lot of so-called evangelicals, they're not really Christians. I'm not saying that they're not saved. Though I'm not affirming that they are saved. I'm just saying a lot of so-called Christians really are a species of like American religio-nationalists, and it is corrupting our vocation as Christians and our public witness as Christians in ways that are really disturbing, you know? So it's just really clear that the reason why millennials and now Zs, why they are so much less interested in religion and so much more willing to identify as being nuns, religious nuns, has to do with the fact that they are just totally turned off by Trumpism and associate Trumpism with evangelical conviction. And that is a crisis for our generation of Christians.
Any other thoughts?
No, I think that's probably quite enough.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about some of that.
I'm sorry again to be a nattering nabob of negativity, but...
No, it's fine.
This is where racial violence and global pandemic and social and political upheaval have left me in November of 2020.
Yeah, I guess we didn't really talk about the pandemic. I think that if it weren't for the pandemic, Trump would have won, and I think it would have been a pretty easy victory for him. But yeah, I think overall, as Christians, there are ways in which you could have voted for either side in perfectly good conscience as a Christian.
That I do not disagree with. I think that's 100% right.
And I think there are... even ways you can actively support either side in good conscience.
I do not disagree with that either. But then there are definitely ways. I mean, like Jerry Falwell Jr.
He's out now, so.
He's suing Liberty, apparently. But just like that kind of Christian, he is not a Christian in any meaningful way.
Yeah, and again, that's...
maybe I shouldn't say, but you know what I mean.
Right. Based on what we've seen of him publicly, I think that's a fine enough statement to make. I think that you're right, the nation is divided, and I think that Christians have an obligation to, particularly within our local congregations, and then to a lesser extent, within our communities, within local congregations, within our families, those two things for sure, kind of to a lesser but still very large extent within our local communities, we have an obligation not to break relationships over politics. If the other person is going to do that, you don't have any control over that, right? You can't stop the person who says, oh, you're voting for Trump, well, don't ever talk to me again, or, oh, you're voting for Biden, don't ever talk to me again. But that shouldn't come from a believer ever. That sort of thing is not okay. And frankly, a lot of this polarization is exacerbated by how much we have wrapped ourselves up in the outcome of national elections. When what we're seeing right now is how important good local institutional processes are. If we want clean elections with clear results, we need people to be involved in local processes because that's where all of this happens. If you're upset by the results of either yesterday's election, if it ends up being Biden, or the election 4 years ago, if you're on the Biden side, but you're not going to city council meetings, well, to some extent, I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for you because that's where it has to start, right? That's where if nothing else, elections are administered, but that's also really where the sort of life and health of our nation is. So anyway, that's maybe too many issues brought in at once.
I think Yuval Levin in today's New York Times op-ed wrote an editorial. So Yuval Levin is the relatively prominent conservative.
A Time to Build, right, was his book.
Among other things. But pundit. I mean, he's more than an intellectual. I don't know how you would describe him. I do think that kind of emphasis on local engagement and local politics is something that progressives would do well to heed more. I'll also say that, like, certain kinds of problems are collective and national in nature. It's not like all problems, I would say, can just be solved at a local level. But I do think, in general, your point about being involved in local is certainly important. But then, I mean, I really think that, like, this is a crisis. It's a crisis for the American church. And honestly, I pray for revival and renewal. and I hope for it, and I work like I'm working for it in my Christian college and in my church and in my national denomination. But honestly, like, you know, the American church just might be too corrupt and it's got to die, and it'll be repopulated by like Chinese and Korean Christians, you know, or African Christians or South American Christians, to bring us back to the roots of the true gospel.
Sure. Yeah. That'll lead us into yet another hour of conversation, and we shouldn't do that because we both have places to go. So, Ed Song, thank you so much for coming back on the City of Man podcast.
I'm grateful to be here as a guest.
You are welcome to be here anytime you want.
And it's good to see you. It's been a while. I'm glad that you and your family are well.
Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning into the City of Man podcast. The City of Man is part of the Christian Humanist Radio Network. Our press liaison is Kristen Filippic. Please check out the other podcasts in our family and get more information about this show or our show notes by visiting ChristianHumanist.org. Please also leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find our show, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/City of Man Podcast, or get in touch with us at CityofManPodcast@gmail.com. This is Coyle Neal reminding you to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's, and render unto God those things that are God's.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of high